Blog Talk Radio.
Crossing over with our ancestors tonight. Tonight is crossing over our ancestors. I want to thank you, Sister, the one that called in, Sister Lorraine that called in. And I want to tell you that this is crossing over our ancestors tonight. And when you do that, doors will open up. I got some scripture I want to share with you tonight. Psalms 44, Roshanda, Psalms 78, and Psalms 21. And the thought I want to send out tonight, stop the killing, save the babies. You know, the Jews marched to Washington today, and it was thousands of them. But blacks got to stop killing each other. They were telling they scared to let their kids go outside. So much of killing going on, black on black. Until we organize and get ourselves together, we have to stop the killings and save the babies. We have to understand that we were brought here not on the Mayflower. We were brought here in chains. We were slaves. We were only somebody on this planet. Black folks were brought here in slavery. Everybody else came on their own. But the black man came, the white man brought us over and made us slaves. So some of that problem that we have is that we still fight, need a husband fighting wife fighting husband, and men don't want to take care of their children, and mama fighting daughter fighting mama, daddy fighting daughter, and all of that going on. But God is in control. I want to say this tonight, the bombing stopped the killing. And, you know, the wages of sin is death. And I was talking to Mama Jo earlier. If my people that are called by my name, I'm going to accept a prayer and turn from their wicked ways, things change. We're getting ready to go into global destruction. Right now, they were showing where over in Iceland, where the whole town is under earthquake and all the people, the thousands of people got to move because it's so bad. But I want you tonight, Ashe, our ancestor. I want to thank you, Sister Lorraine. I want to thank you, Sister Cook. And I was talking, and Mother Roger came sweeping the streets off, saying, Bishop, a lot of things go on. Tonight, I want to play a tape by Malcolm X, where he talked about black men have to come together and black women have to come together to save, just stop the killing, save the babies. Let me say that again, stop the killing and save the babies. I'm praying for you and you. You have to make up your mind that you're going to obey God. You got to make up your mind that you're going to go to the next level. And, you know, I know a lot of people, they call when they want something, but when they want them, you don't hear nothing from them. I want to say this tonight. If you got a need, you plant a seed. I was telling a young lady, she said, I ain't got nothing. I said, you give what you got for you to give a seed. She said, well, a woman had two whole cakes. She said, I'm going to eat this and die. But the prophet said, give it to me. Because she obeyed the prophet, you know, she fed the whole community. You got to understand, when you begin to make your mind up, when I was telling a young lady, I said, this young lady can't keep a phone. I said, well, look, you got to need to buy you a phone. Do you? What's wrong that you can't have a phone? That's, you supposed to be able to contact your loved ones and contact things that happen. I'm praying for 20, 23-24 be a door open for some of you in the healing. I want to put this down, Exodus 14:14. God to Moses, step back, and I'm going to fight this battle. It's a battle that you can't fight tonight. There's a situation going on in your family that you got to tell God about. And once you give it to God, he'll break it up. And I think that's the most important thing tonight, is give your problem to God and let him handle it. Tonight I'm praying for you, Milton, I'm praying for you. Bobby, I'm praying for you. I want to tell you, Chelsea, I'm praying for you. Dr. Christian, I'm praying for you. Mary Hawkins, I'm praying for you and your family. Prayer means something, and prayer changes things. And I don't care. I was talking, Sister Wanda was telling me how prayer changed things. And, you know, sometimes you got to have faith. It ain't how much you drink, how much you smoke. You got to have faith in God. You got to know God for yourself. I was talking to Sister Rochambeau. She said, I know God kept me and God kept my family. I was glad to hear her say that because I seen the anointing that God gave her. And I could see her grandmother standing around her and telling her that you speaking with the other family member ain't speaking. And what I'm saying to you, sometimes you got to stray away and you got to tell your family members the truth. They got to stop fighting and then sit down. It's all that evil that's going on. It's a fit not by self of evildoers. They'll soon be cut down. And the wages of sin is death. The gift of God, eternal life. I'm praying tonight for a miracle breakthrough for you that are listening. Today, I live streamed. I was on live stream today, and I was talking about stop the killing and save the babies. I was talking about God got your back. You know, with all the killing going on all over the world, blood and storm, but God going to put a fence around you that understand that God is God and God is over the universe. So you get ready for God to bless you and God over a door for you. So I feel good tonight. I share our ancestors. I want to talk about two ancestors tonight. I want to talk about Sister Lena Mae Anderson, who helped build House of Prayer, brought people into House of Prayer, who went and got people out the street. She did that. And I was there with her when she did it. Then I want to talk to Mother Cook that helped people. And Deacon Dan Cook and Mother Carrie that helped feed people and helped woman. She was a midwife. Reach out and help men and women. So I want to tell you tonight, hold your head up high because you're going to the next level. I got a prophet to jump out. I think you got your own business. I think you got your own restaurant, your own business. Because this is what I'm going to get to talk about. God's going to put somebody. If your family don't want to help you, God's going to put money where you can set up for a little business. So the brothers make all kinds of excuses. They got money to make excuses. I want to tell you, my Sister Jean, all is well. Sister Jean is still going to open up for you. I want to tell you, Sister Rose, I'm still going to break open as I prophesy tonight. I just came back to prophesy the word to you. And Sister Russell, all that the devil stole, God's going to restore. Dr. Christian, walk the battle path, God on the door. I want to thank you, Mama Joe, for your preaching Sunday touched so many people. I'm praying for you, Mother Francis, down in New Orleans. And as I come to New Orleans, Mother Francis, I will see you. I'm in Jim with our team, Dr. Monroe, Ruston, and Homer. those on the hearing, God told us to go and pray. And I don't care if anyone get healed, one get healed in Ruston, one get healed in Monroe. God sent us on a mission. God sent you on a mission. You got to go on that mission. I want to tell you, Rochelle, get ready. I don't know what the rest of them going to do. The loss of life. But I want to tell you, them that stand, God's going to pray. There's a lot of faith. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. There's a lot of people being killed. Abaddon itself and a lot of murdering. Those babies. Over there where they fighting that, they killed a whole lot of babies. They just killed 7,500 people already, and they're still fighting. Now, I want to say to those Jews, stop the war. Stop the killing the same babies. Dr. King talks about that the only way for us to come together is to stop killing each other. Some of us ain't got time to see what's going on. You know, and I want to tell you, when I tell a story, sometimes you don't want to hear the truth. And when somebody tells you the truth, some of you don't want to hear the truth. The truth is just the truth. And the truth opens up doors for you, okay? So some of them don't want to hear the truth. See, but the truth is the truth. You got to hear the truth, open up the door. I want to play a little of Malcolm X.
Between you and me. We want to talk right down to earth. In a language that everybody here can easily understand. We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is us. We're her problem. The only reason she has a problem is she doesn't want us here. And every time you look at yourself, be you black, brown, red, or yellow, a so-called Negro,
I want to say this before I go. Malcolm X talked about how blacks are struggling. We're supposed to be more advanced, more jobs, and we're still struggling. Our ancestors, I say, come here. They work from sunup to sundown, and you still suffer. Every black should have their own business. Every black should have their money. But because of racism, the white folks have used us. And DBS reparation, we're caught up. But let Malcolm finish.
You represent a person who poses such a serious problem for America because you're not wanted. Once you face this as a fact, then you can start plotting a course that will make you appear intelligent instead of unintelligent. What you and I need to do is learn to forget our differences. When we come together, we don't come together as bastards. Or a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Baptist. And you don't catch hell because you're a Methodist. You don't catch hell because you're a Methodist or a Baptist. You don't catch hell because you're a Democrat or a Republican. You don't catch hell because you're a Mason or an Elk. And you sure don't catch hell because you're an American, because if you was an American, you wouldn't catch no hell. You catch hell because you're a black man. You catch hell, all of us catch hell for the same reason. So we are all black people, so-called Negroes, second-class citizens, ex-slaves. You are nothing but an ex-slave. You don't like to be told that. But what else are you? You are ex-slave. You didn't come here on the Mayflower. You came here in a slave ship, in chains, like a horse or a cow or a chicken. And you were brought here by the people who came here on the Mayflower. You were brought here by the so-called pilgrims or founding fathers. They were the ones who brought you here. We have a common enemy. We have this in common. We have a common oppressor, a common exploiter, and a common discriminator. So once we all realize that we have this common enemy, then we unite on the basis of what we have in common. And what we have foremost in common is that enemy. white man. He's an enemy to all of us. I know some of you all think that some of them are enemies. Time will tell. In Bandung, back in, I think, 1954, was the first unity meeting in centuries of black people. And once you study what happened at the Bandung Conference and the results of the Bandung Conference, it actually served as a model for the same procedure you and I can use to get our problems solved. At Bandung, all the nations came together. They were dark nations from Africa and Asia. Some of them were Buddhists. Some of them were Muslims. Some of them were Christians. Some of them were Confucianists. Some were atheists. Despite their religious differences, they came together. Some were communists. Some were socialists. Some were capitalists. Despite their economic and political differences, they came together. All of them were black, brown, red, or yellow. The number one thing that was not allowed to attend the Bandung Conference was the white man. He couldn't come. Once they excluded the white man, they found that they could get together. Once they kept him out, everybody else fell right in and fell in line. This is the thing that you and I have to understand. And these people who came together didn't have nuclear weapons. They didn't have jet planes. They didn't have all of the heavy armaments that the white man had, but they had unity. They were able to submerge their little petty differences and agree on one thing, that though one African came from Kenya and was being colonized by the Englishmen, and another African came from the Congo and was being colonized by the Belgians, and another African came from Guinea and was being colonized by the French, and another came from Angola and was being colonized by the Portuguese, when they came to the Bandung Conference, they looked at the Portuguese and at the Frenchmen and at the Englishmen and at the other Dutchmen and learn or realize that the one thing that all of them had in common, they were all from Europe. They were all Europeans, blonde, blue-eyed, and white-skinned. They began to recognize who their enemy was. The same man that was colonizing our people in Kenya was colonizing our people in the Congo. The same one in the Congo was colonizing our people in South Africa and in southern Rhodesia and in Burma and in India and in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. They realized all over the world where a dark man was being oppressed, he was being oppressed by the white man. Where the dark man was being exploited, he was being exploited by the white man. So they got together under this basis, that they had a common enemy. And when you and I here in Detroit and in Michigan and in America, who have been awakened today, look around us, we too realize here in America, we all have a common enemy. Whether he's in Georgia or Michigan, whether he's in California or New York, he's the same man. Blue eyes and blonde hair and pale skin. Same man. So what we have to do is what they did. They agreed to stop quarreling among themselves. Any little spat that they had, they settled it among themselves. Go into a huddle. Don't let the enemy know that you got a disagreement. Instead of us airing our differences in public, we have to realize we're all the same family. And when you have a family squabble, you don't get out on the sidewalk. If you do, everybody calls you uncouth, unrefined, uncivilized, savage. If you don't make it at home, you settle it at home. You get in the closet. Argue it out behind closed doors. And then when you come out on the street, you pose a common front, a united front. And this is what we need to do in the community and in the city and in the state. We need to stop airing our differences in front of the white man. Put the white man out of our meeting, number one, and then sit down and talk shop with each other. I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolution, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal, and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Yes. Right. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. Then the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. Come on, man. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. As long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark. I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How are you going to be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered, and at the same time you're going to get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know? Violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. If it's wrong to be violent, defending black women and black children and black babies and black men, then it's wrong for America to draft us and make us violent abroad in defense of her. The Chinese Revolution, they wanted land. They threw the British out, along with the Uncle Tom Chinese. Yeah, they did. They set a good example. When I was in prison, I read an article, and don't be shocked when I say I was in prison. You're still in prison. That's what America means, prison. When I was in prison, I read an article in Life magazine showing little Chinese girl, 9 years old. Her father was on his hands and knees, and she was pulling the trigger because he was an Uncle Tom Chinaman. Yeah. When they had the revolution over there, they took a whole generation of Uncle Toms, just wiped them out. And within 10 years, that little girl became a full-grown woman. No more Toms in China. And today is one of the toughest, roughest most feared countries on this earth by the white man. Because there are no Uncle Toms over there. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward all research. And when you see that you got problems, all you have to do is examine the historic method used all over the world by others who had problems similar to yours. And once you see how they got theirs straight, then you know how you can get yours straight. There's been a revolution, a black revolution, going on in Africa. In Kenya, the Mau Mau were revolutionaries. They were the ones who made the word Uhuru. They were the ones who brought it to the fore. The Mau Mau, they were revolutionaries. They believed in scorched earth. They knocked everything aside that got in their path. And their revolution also was based on land, a desire for land. In Algeria, the northern part of Africa, a revolution took place. The Algerians were revolutionaries. They wanted land. France offered to let them be integrated into France. They told them to France, to hell with France. They wanted some land, not some France. And they engaged in a bloody battle. So I cite these various revolutions, brothers and sisters, to show you, you don't have a peaceful revolution. You don't have a turn-the-other-cheek revolution. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution. Only kind of revolution that's nonviolent is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution based on loving your enemy is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution in which the goal is a desegregated lunch counter, a desegregated theater, a desegregated park, and a desegregated public toilet. You can sit down next to white folks on the toilet. That's no revolution. Revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality. The white man knows what a revolution is. He knows that the black revolution is worldwide in scope and in nature. The black revolution is sweeping Asia, sweeping Africa. It's rearing its head in Latin America. The Cuban revolution, that's a revolution. They overturned the system. Revolution is in Asia. Revolution is in Africa. And the white man is screaming because he sees revolution in Latin America. How do you think he'll react to you when you learn what a real revolution is? You don't know what a revolution is. If you did, you wouldn't use that word. A revolution is bloody. Revolution is hostile. Revolution knows no compromise. Revolution overturns and destroys everything that gets in its way. And you sitting around here like a knot on these folks, no matter how much they hate me. No, you need a revolution. Who ever heard of a revolution where they lock arms, as Reverend Cleek was pointing out beautifully, singing, "We Shall Overcome"? Just tell me, you don't do that in a revolution. You don't do any singing. You're too busy swinging. It's based on land. A revolutionary wants land so he can set up his own nation, an independent nation. These Negroes aren't asking for no nation. They're trying to crawl back on the plantation. when you want a nation, that's called nationalism. When the white man became involved in a revolution in this country against England, what was it for? He wanted this land so he could set up another white nation. That's white nationalism. The American Revolution was white nationalism. The French Revolution was white nationalism. The Russian Revolution, too, yes, it was white nationalism. You don't think so? Why you think Khrushchev and Mao can't get their heads together? White nationalism. All the revolutions that's going on in Asia, in Africa today, are based on what? Black nationalism. A revolutionary is a black nationalist. He wants a nation. I was reading some beautiful words by Reverend Clee, pointing out why he couldn't get together with someone else here in the city. Because all of them were afraid of being identified with black nationalism. If you're afraid of black nationalism, you're afraid of revolution. And if you love revolution, you love black nationalism. To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro. Back during slavery, there was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro.
You go to school with Brainer, maybe get a $1 million deal.
I got a chance at the life I want. This is our time.
Loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. Yeah. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. But in the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of y'all are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore all cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. Got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro. Our government. I even heard one say our astronaut. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy, that's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's because the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Tom. 20th century Uncle Tom's, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist, then the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and curse, you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening. Because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he don't want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back. To keep you from fighting back, he gets these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me. They're just like Novocaine. Suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering. Just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleek pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Quran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts their hand on you, send them to the cemetery. a good religion. In fact, that's not an old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about.
Lots of people need insulin. Like him.
An eye for an eye. And a tooth for a tooth. And a head for a head. And a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one, resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf. And you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, a so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him, make him a celebrity, and then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is the method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders begin to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money. And then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro men. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, and right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside the head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers start talking about they were going to boycott it, the filibuster, then the Negroes start talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress, and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the black revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect and told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't stop it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it.
Don't rent a car. Rent the car you love for the prices you'll love.
He said, we'll get involved in that car. Make it work. Always want to be a part. And all the people marching up there in Washington.
A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City. The Carlisle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic society headed by a white man named Stephen Currier called all the top civil rights leaders together.
He gave them some money.
They can't do it. It can only produce according to what that particular system was constructed to produce. The system of this country cannot produce freedom for an Afro-American. For this system, this economic system, this political system, this social system, this system, period, it is impossible for it, as it stands, to produce freedom right now for the black man in this country. It's impossible. And if ever a chicken did produce a duck egg, I'm quite sure you'd say that it was certainly a revolutionary.
Well, we're justified in seeking civil rights if it means equality of opportunity, because all we're doing there is trying to collect for our investment. Our mothers and fathers invested sweat and blood. 310 years we worked in this country without a dime in return. I mean without a dime in return. You let the white man walk around here talking about how rich this country is, but you never stop to think how it got rich so quick. It got rich, you made it rich. You take the people who are in this audience right now, they're poor, we're all poor as individuals. Our weekly salary individually amounts to hardly anything. But if you take the salary of everyone in here collectively, it'll fill up a whole lot of baskets. It's a lot of wealth. If you can collect the wages of just these people right here for a year, you'll be rich, richer than rich. When you look at it like that, think how rich Uncle Sam had to become. Not with this handful, but millions of black people. Your and my mother and father, who didn't work an 8-hour shift, but work from can't see in the morning until can't see at night. And work for nothing. Making the white man rich. Making Uncle Sam rich. This is our investment. This with our contribution, our blood. Not only did we give of our free labor, we gave of our blood. Every time he had a call to arms, we were the first ones in uniform. We died on every battlefield the white man had. We have made a greater sacrifice than anybody who's standing up in America today. We have made a greater contribution and have collected less. Have collected less. Civil rights for those of us whose philosophy is black nationalism means give it to us now. Don't even wait next year. Give it to us yesterday. And that's not fast enough. All of these crackers, and that's what they are, crackers, are, they belong to the Democratic Party. That's the party they belong to.
Same one you belong to. Same one you support. Same one you say is going to get you this and get you that.
Why, the base of the Democratic Party is in the South. It's the foundation of its authority is in the South. The head of the Democratic Party is sitting in the White House. He could have gotten Mrs. Beamer in Atlantic City. He could have opened up his mouth and had her seated. Hubert Humphrey could have opened his mouth and had her seated. Wagner, the mayor right here, could have opened up his mouth and used his weight and had her seated. Don't be talking about some crackers down in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. They're all over playing the same game. Lyndon B. Johnson is the head of the cracker party. Now, I don't want to be stepping on toes or saying things that you didn't think I was going to say, but don't ever, ever, ever call me up here to talk about Mississippi. It's controlled right up here from the north. Mississippi is controlled from the north. Alabama is controlled from the north. These northern crackers are in cahoots with the southern crackers. Only these northern crackers smile in your face and show you their teeth. And they stick the knife in your back when you turn around. You at least know what that man down there is doing, and you know how to deal with him. So all I say is this. This is all I say. That when you start talking about one, talk about the other. When you start worrying about the part or the piece, worry about the whole. And if this piece is no good, the entire pie is no good because it all comes out of the same plate and it's made up out of the same ingredients.
Article number 2 of the Constitutional Amendment provides you and me the right to own a rifle or a shotgun. It's constitutionally legal to own a shotgun or a rifle. This doesn't mean you're going to get a rifle and form battalions and go out looking for white folks, although you'll be within your rights. I mean, you'd be justified, but it would be illegal. And we don't do anything illegal. If the white man doesn't want the black man buying rifles and shotguns, then let the government do its job. That's all. And don't let the white man come to you and ask you, what do you think about what Malcolm said? Why, you old Uncle Tom? I hope you understand. Don't go out shooting people. But any kind, brothers and sisters, and especially the men in this audience, some of you are all wearing congressional medals of honor, got shoulders this wide, chest this big, muscles that big, sit around and read where they bomb a church and murder in cold blood, not some grown-ups, but four little girls, while they're praying to the same God the white man taught them to pray to. And you and I see the government go down there and can't find who this. Why, this man found, they found Eichmann while he was hiding down in Argentina.
I have great respect and admiration for one who has the nerve to tie his own hands and then walk out and let a brute brutalize him. I have to respect him because he's doing something that I don't understand. What he's doing is beyond my power even to comprehend. It would be equivalent to putting handcuffs on me and putting me in the ring and telling me to fight Cassius Clay or Sonny Liston non-violently. I don't think I could do it. And whoever could do it, I'd have to, you know, power to it. But all I'm saying is this. When you're in Mississippi, whenever you're dealing with an enemy, you have to be able to, there must be some dialogue. You have to be able to communicate. You can't, and the medium of communication usually is language. You must speak the language that the other person understands. When you're in Mississippi, speaking the language of morality or the language of nonviolence, you're not communicating. You're talking a language that they don't understand. All I suggest is, and I don't suggest it as condemnation of Coco or Smith. I know too many of them. They're brave students, men, and all of that. All I'm saying is, since your approach, as you say, is tactical, a tactical approach is designed to get certain results. It's designed to keep you alive. It's designed to bring about victory. Why, we just can't say that victory has been brought about. Let me tell you something. I was over in Africa, and I read what they did to Dinka. They said that they beat that black one to death. They shot the other two. They said they beat every bone. Every bone was broken. Now, you know what? I think people who tell our people to be nonviolent are almost agents of the Ku Klux Klan.
Up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negative. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungle, savage, cannibal. And naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not eat the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not eat yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. To the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you will find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate